Hi everyone, I'm Gina Dana, and this is Environmental Hub's Green Spot. This podcast is designed to highlight the most pressing environmental issues facing our world. We are going to be talking with professional environmentalists and activists, as well as other members of our global community, about today's major issues. Prepare to get active. On Blog Talk Radio. This is Jeannie Dana, and we have a great show for you today. We have Nyla Pipes of the One Florida Foundation. Nyla Pipes is a Washington State native that moved to Florida 6 years ago. When the Indian River Lagoon and St. Lucie River turned green with blue-green algae in 2013, she stepped forward to work towards a solution. Nyla is a wife and mother of two. Her degree is in electronic media, theater, and film. She worked in radio and television in Spokane, Washington. Growing up in the Columbia River in Washington, Nyla has been a protector of water and natural resources her entire life. It's just the way children are raised in the Pacific Northwest. Nyla will talk to us today about her foundation, so I want to bring Nyla on. And hello, Nyla.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's great to have you. Welcome to our show, and as the director of One Florida Foundation, please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing with One Florida.
Well, One Florida Foundation was founded in 2013 when the Indian River Lagoon and St. Lucie River turned toxic with blue-green algae. And the more I studied, the more I realized that we were going to have to work long-term to solve this problem. We have a lot of inputs and a lot of issues as far as pollution and too much fresh water into a brackish estuary. And the problem, the biggest problem, is we have infrastructure issues that are going to take a lot of time to solve. So I was just a mom. I was going to rallies. I was going to meetings. I was trying to figure out how to fix the issues facing us. And it became apparent that we were going to have to work for a very long time, which is why we founded One Florida Foundation.
Oh, yes. And who did you start it with?
My partner is a gentleman named Captain Don Voss. And the way we met is really rather fun. He was attending the same rallies and the same meetings, and he would come in a muck monster costume. Now, first of all, as a Washington State native, I didn't know what muck was at the time. But in the state of Florida, we have this wonderful, rich earth that is created, with the different materials that break down, the plant materials and whatnot, that create this really, really thick muck. And the muck can become a real issue when it's places it's not supposed to be. You know, it's one thing if it's south of Lake Okeechobee and you're growing crops on it. It's a whole nother thing if it's in the bottom of your riverbeds and your estuaries and killing seagrass or in your spring areas. So anyway, he would come as this muck monster. And when he showed up at the rallies, I was sort of drawn to him because he was a real character. And we got to know each other both online and in person. And we ended up doing a lot of trips to Tallahassee, which is a 6-hour drive from where I'm located. And in those trips, we had a lot of conversations. And this gentleman is a Purple Heart recipient from the Vietnam War, and he ended up in Florida as a part of his recovery process, utilizing the water to learn to walk again. And that's why I work with him, is I know that his motivations are pure. I know where his heart is. This man just wants to give back, and I think he's just a really remarkable individual. And we started One Florida Foundation together, along with another gentleman in Central Florida named Steve Edmonds, who is a Florida native who grew up right here at Ground Zero 4, the Lake Okeechobee discharges.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, I understand from reading that One Florida Foundation has a different perspective to dealing with Florida's water issues. And I commend you for it. And I see your organization as working with all sides all the people that should come to the table, the legislators, the businesses, the farmers, all the people involved in Florida's problems need to come to the table. And this is what it looks like your foundation is doing. Is that how you see it?
I would say that's really accurate. Those are definitely our goals. They're not easy goals to accomplish. You know, when you've got different needs, for instance, out of the same pieces of land, of course, people are going to have differing opinions. And sometimes things get a little heated. But, you know, ultimately, I think that human beings really, when you dial right in, they want the same things. They want sustainability. They want to be able to provide for their families. They want to have a future for their children and their grandchildren. And with our water issues particularly, we don't see any other way but to begin to bring people together and convince people, you know, why maybe the way they're using the land or using the water isn't helping with those goals of sustainability and long-term ability to live on this planet. So, yeah, that is our goal, is to bring people together and to work forward and to get past some of the age-old fights and rhetoric that we have seen happening.
Yes, yes. I see that just from my point of view. Being involved for 9 months, I see that there's a lot of division between many, many groups and in all states, not just Florida. And that's one thing about environmentalists. They got to realize, even if you're coming from a different perspective, even if you're a different person or you have a different, you're in a different location, you have different connections, you're all going for the same thing. And I think everyone in Florida wants to agree that they need clean water and the Everglades need to survive. So
something that
I said last week, and I need to apologize for, is I blamed everything, literally all of Florida's water problems, on U.S. sugar. And although U.S. sugar is the sugar industry is a big part of the problem for Lake Okeechobee, the septic and the runoff from the farms north of the lake is what you've taught me about this week. And I have to say that you've corrected me, and I would love to hear more about that, what the whole problem is, and not just the sugar.
Sure. You know, I think the best place to start with this conversation about what the problem is to talk, first of all, about how the system works. So what we're really talking about is the entire Everglades system. You know, this is an ecosystem that is ridiculously large. It encompasses 16 counties in the state of Florida. We're talking 18,000 square miles. I mean, if you think about how big that is for one natural ecosystem, of course we're going to have incredibly differing views and, of course, incredible amounts of pollution coming from many sources. So the way that the system works is you start with Shingle Creek. Shingle Creek is the headwaters of the Everglades, and it is just barely south of Orlando. In fact, if you drive 528 to get to the airport in Florida, you're going to drive across Shingle Creek. So it's Shingle Creek and the upper chain of lakes, which is a whole series of lakes to include Lake Kissimmee, Lake Toho. There's a number of them. And then the Kissimmee River, as you head south, used to be a long, meandering, winding river full of oxbows. And, you know, the state of Florida is very, very flat. So during a rainy season, those oxbows, the river would actually overflow the oxbows. And in many, many places in the Kissimmee Basin, water sat on the land. And it sat there for months sometimes. I mean, it used to take 6 months or more for a single drop of water from Shingle Creek to reach Lake Okeechobee. And, you know, it would sit on the land and it would recharge the aquifer. It sits over the Florida aquifer up there, and there's some superficial aquifers as well. And so the water would sit on the land and it would sink down in through the soil, being cleansed as it went naturally, as nature intended, and it would recharge our aquifer. Also, a lot of it would evaporate off, and it would continue to create that rain cycle that we have in Florida. So all of this used to happen. And then some of that water, of course, did reach Lake Okeechobee. from Lake Okeechobee, it used to, again, overflow the banks of the lake. In fact, there are people who say Lake Okeechobee used to be 2 to 3 times the size that it is, which is saying quite a bit because it is the second largest lake in North America. It's huge. So it used to just be a lot of what I would call swampland. Of course, you know, the scientific term is sheet flow. So it would overflow the banks of Lake O, and the majority of it did go south. It would overflow the southern end of the lake into this amazing amount of sheet flow south of Lake Okeechobee, with most of it going kind of southwest into Florida Bay, and a percentage of it also went southeast into Biscayne Bay, which, of course, you know, on the eastern side particularly, we've really built up Florida. So a lot of the area that we would want to send water south if we were to redo this natural system has been taken up by cities. You know, the western portions of Miami and Fort Lauderdale, I mean, there's development there that we, at this point in time, can't feasibly move. So we've got these goals to restore the Everglades. But in order to restore the Everglades, you have to understand the entire system and treat, if you will, as if it were a patient, the entire system holistically.
Yes, yes, not just the discharges.
Oh, and you, yeah. Yes, exactly. And you did ask about, of course, the pollution. Along the way, as the pollution happens, now that we understand the system, along the way as the pollution happens, you know, it's water that is flowing unabated off of places like I-4 in Orlando, and over dairy farms in the Central Valley, because what we've done is we've rearranged the Everglades. We have drained swampland using a whole series of canal systems. And the first canal to be built was the Kissimmee River. They straightened that Kissimmee River. They first built a big dike around Lake Okeechobee so that it could no longer overflow its banks. That started in the 30s. And then they straightened the Kissimmee River, taking away all that natural flow, that natural heat flow, and the natural aquifer recharge. So we've reorganized the system, and we've really messed it up. And as we go, we have built on it, and we've polluted it in a number of ways. It's not just U.S. Sugar.
Yes, no, I realize that now, and it is the farms north of the lake, and it is the septic. You've talked about the septic problem.
Septic is a huge issue in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's polluting our Indian River Lagoon. It's polluting our St. Lucie River. They have septic issues on the Caloosahatchee side as well. One of the things a lot of people don't understand about the system is the Caloosahatchee River and the St. Lucie River never used to be connected to the lake. On the Caloosahatchee side, there was a small amount of connection in a really wet year because Lake O would overflow and some of that water would get into the river. But they unnaturally connected that and channelized from the Caloosahatchee up to Lake O. And they also unnaturally connected the St. Lucie River to Lake O. So we've got these discharges that happen because it's the only place to put that water because the Herbert Hoover Dike is weak and the Everglades, as we know them today, can't really hold all the water. We built an unnatural dam with the Tamiami Trail at the very south end of the system. So we have to redo all this infrastructure. And in the meantime, while we have all of these unnatural water flow problems, we also have unnatural pollution that we're adding. And septic is a huge part of that. We are seeing problems with septic primarily because even a fully functioning state-of-the-art septic system and on-site sewage disposal is the technical term, requires 48 inches from the bottom of the system to your groundwater. In the state of Florida, the average, because our groundwater table is so high and our land is so flat and it rains so much, the average amount of space we have, ground, you know, we have soil, underneath the bottom of our septic system to our groundwater is 6 inches. So even the most state-of-the-art brand-new septic system is not likely to be filtering our water the way it's supposed to, or filtering the effluent the way it's supposed to before it reaches the groundwater. So we're feeding a lot of nutrients in artificially into the system. You know, we've got tons of point source and non-point source pollution happening all over, and just way too much water flowing to really blame one particular individual or entity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's why everyone must come to the table. Now, what is your organization doing right now to bring everyone to the table?
You know, at the moment, we've got a lot of meetings that are ongoing. We've had more meetings since 2013 than I think we ever had before. Mm-hmm. And we're encouraging people at those meetings to really step up and talk about what it is they need out of the system. You know, I mean, we've got agriculture who needs water certain times of year. We have this anomaly in Florida that's different than anywhere else, I think, in the world, where we're either in extreme water conditions where there's too much, or we have drought. So we have to manage a system in a way that everyone has the sort of water that they're supposed to have. So we encourage the people from the agricultural side to stand up at these meetings and say, you know what, this is what we need out of the system. And on the environmental side, we encourage them to listen. And on the flip side of that, we've been talking to people about on the agricultural end of things and industry and business, we've been talking to them about dialing back their needs a little bit and considering what we need from a natural system, what we need for our environment, and flat out saying, is profit really the most important thing in your world? Or is it that balance between profit and sustainability for your future generations? You know, if nobody thinks about that, then we're never going to get there. And I will say that I think that people are really beginning to see that we all have the same goals. We just happen to go about them from different viewpoints.
Yes, yes. There are 7 billion people on Earth, and nobody sees this day the same. And that's the truth.
It is the truth. And unfortunately, Florida is growing so quickly. I think, you know, a landmark or some such ridiculous thing. I mean, we've got a lot of people on a peninsula.
Oh, yes. Now, what are some of the, if you could tell me, what are you working on right now? What are your current advocacies that you're working on?
You know, one of the most important things that we think needs to happen is not just to talk the talk, but to walk the walk. So we do a lot of work in our local community. We do a lot of hands-on cleanups, you know. And, for instance, we have this small creek that leads right into the Indian River Lagoon. And it happens to run through an incredibly urban area where people may or may not be financially able to get out on the water. People may not necessarily have the same sort of background to value the water. So what we've been doing is working on this particular creek with groups of people who had never been kayaking, for instance. And so we put particularly the children in this community into kayaks for the first time, because we're cleaning the banks of the creek, but we're also cleaning, you know, debris out of the water using kayaks. And the goal is to get them connected to the earth and connected to the water. And, you know, in the meantime, we also make a small dent in the pollution problem. You know, working with the kids is a really important part of what we do, because they're going to be the people that solve these problems for us. This is not a one-generation problem, especially when you're talking about the plans that we have to have in place. The plans that we have in place for Everglades restoration are multifaceted. There's 60-plus plans in Central Everglades restoration plan to begin with. At the state and the federal level, we're talking billions of dollars, 50-50 cost share. We have to fight every year to get these plans funded. So we're looking at 30-plus years just for the plans that are on the books. And to stop the discharges, we certainly do not have enough storage in those plants, no matter how you look at it. So we still have to find more projects. So our kids are important. Our youth today are going to be the people that finish the work we're working on now. That's the reality.
Yes.
So we need them educated.
Yeah, and you're doing wonderful. You a wonderful organization, and I just love that your idea is to find solutions and with education and awareness. Now, thank you so much for telling me about the organization. I would like to say one thing before we go on to the rest of our interview here. I find that all the groups in Florida, and I don't care if you're closed or open. If you're a large group or a small, if you're an organization, a foundation, whatever you are, you're all working towards the same thing. And something that I fight also, and I think we all do, is infighting or somebody trying to slander or to discredit each other. And I tell you, there are people that they would love nothing more than to see all the groups split apart and no one speak to each other, because that's how nothing gets done in this world. So I really commend it. It's been an honor to have you on, and I really do appreciate your organization, and I think more people should follow your lead and your model. Now, to speak about something that's a little uncomfortable here, we do have a problem with one person, and as far as I can see, in January, the PalmBeachPost.com ran an article in their blog section called The Opinion Zone. Now, anybody could write anything. We had a woman named Sally Swartz who wrote an opinion that you were not an environmental group, but that you were for the sugar industry. Now, this whole premise of hers was that your captain boss told a former commissioner that you each gave $1,000, and that Robert Coker from U.S. Sugar offered to match this money to start off. Now, I don't see any proof of this. I just read this one paragraph. So if you have anything to say to Sally, I think that we should address this, because I do not believe it, and I think it should stop.
You know, it really is. It really is spurred by some of that infighting that you originally mentioned. And first and foremost, I thank you for being, you know, a fan of our work and for understanding that we really are trying to just bring people together. I'm going to continue doing that no matter what. And what happened was, in that theme, we early on in 2013, maybe late 2013, I could get you the exact date, but we tried really hard to get members of the environmental community from an organization called the Rivers Coalition, which this former commissioner is a member of, and U.S. Sugar to the same table. And we had 5 meetings scheduled, and the whole goal was to identify the things we could all agree on and work together on. And on the same token, identify the areas where we disagreed so that we could maybe work on the 80% we felt we agreed on and leave those other ones on the table for now. Yeah. And it wasn't as successful as we had hoped it would be. We had 5 meetings planned. We made it beautiful. We had lunch brought in. It was a gorgeous setting, and we agreed that we were going to keep this confidential until the day when we came out victorious. You know, we wanted to just, you know, you've got to understand this fight against sugar has been going on for quite some time. And, you know, I've only been here 6 years. I don't know all the ins and outs of why, but I do know that it's got to stop if we're going to make any progress. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah.
So what we did is we put everybody at the same table, and we had these beautiful lunches, and Robert Coker, in his generosity, offered to pay for the lunches. Another gentleman who's a member of the Rivers Coalition stepped up and offered to do so as well. In spirit of cooperation and collaboration, which is why we were there, We accepted. We did that openly in front of everyone in the room. This particular commissioner, who is mentioned in Sally Swartz's blog, decided that he didn't want to honor the confidentiality. He wanted to cause trouble, quite frankly. Sally Swartz interviewed me for that blog, and she asked about all of this, and I told her every single thing I just told you. Mm-hmm. And she chose to quote me as refusing to confirm or deny. Now, I have one question. Do I sound like a no-comment kind of person to you?
No. Any more than I do.
So, you know, the simple fact is it's some really fabricated nonsense. And there is history of why that happened with this particular former commissioner. It involves them not paying for a bus trip to Washington, D.C. that I helped to organize and all kinds of other things. But, you know, I don't choose to focus on that. I would really like to put this to rest and move forward.
Bring the focus in. Yeah. I didn't mean
to bring the focus into that.
So.
But it's okay.
You wanted that out on the table. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now it's good to clear the air.
Yes,
exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nyla. This was a wonderful conversation. And like I said, I think we could put that that little article or that little blog to rest. And as far as I'm concerned, you're a wonderful organization. I'm so glad that you're part of Environmental Hub. And I look forward to your posts, and I follow you. And thank you very much. I just want to say before we do, that anyone that would like to join Environmental Hub, please come on Facebook and search Environmental Hub. And you'll meet wonderful people. You'll meet Nyla Pipes and me. And we have many other groups and people. And we love our little group. On Thursdays, you can come and play music. And we do different things. We deal with all different kinds of environmental issues and in all states. And it's not just Florida, but my heart is in Florida right now. And next week I'll be in Florida with the Mississauga Seminole, and we'll be walking for Walk for Future Generations, and I'll be posting from there. So thank you, and thank you, Nyla. Thank you for having me on. Oh, it was really wonderful. And you made it through podcast number 2 of Environmental Hub's Green Spot, and that's wonderful. And thank you. And like I said, I really appreciate the work you're doing, and it's been really wonderful. So, okay.
Okay.
Okay, and we have some. We seem to have some dead time here. We have 37 minutes now. 37 seconds. Say something else to me.
Say something else. Thank you very much for all that you do for our environment, Jeannie.
Okay. Well, thank you, dear. Okay. Well, I'll let the exit go now, and I'll talk to you in a while.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I would like to leave you with a quote and a thought. Environmental issues are not local issues, they are global. Social media activism not only works, it is one of the best ways to outshout the special interests that actively work against our environment. When you see a petition, sign it. When there is a call-in event, pick up the phone and call your legislators. When there is a write-in event, send an email. When there is a peaceful protest in your community, attend. Search Environmental Hub on Facebook and join us. Until next time, wishing you peace and love.